Okay, so we do have a couple more that'll be trickling in the next few minutes, but let's just begin with a few introductory things. I read a book, actually, it was only about a year ago, and it's called Greek for Life, and I would highly recommend it. It's not a Greek grammar, all right? So, like, we're going to be studying grammar, but the book is basically written to try and convince you that Greek is worth your time. And it's worth your time for the rest of your life. In other words, we are given a really cool privilege, in a sense, of studying the original language in which the New Testament was written. And as much work and time, and in some cases, for some of you who've taken classes where you paid for it, then it's even money, right, that is involved in the process of learning Greek, but it's really easy for us to just let it go, right? The old adage, if you don't use it, you lose it, is very true. So it's fun to study it in a group. And then, I mean, I've even made the suggestion that once we, you know, get through this class, if we got some Greek readers, we should even just do every other week Greek reading class, where we just read out of the Greek New Testament.
A Greek nerd fest.
A total Greek nerd fest. That's exactly what it is. But back to that book, it's one of the things I benefited from it was it basically is giving you, not shortcuts, but suggestions on how to learn Greek. And just, you know, I'll make some suggestions as we go, little, you know, tricks here and there to help you memorize and help you remember what you memorize. But there's just a lot of grunt work in Greek. Like, you just have, there's just a lot of raw memory work to memorize forms, memorize case endings, things like that. But the whole point of the book was to basically try and convince you of the value of Greek. And so that's what I'm going to spend at least 5 or 10 minutes trying to, I mean, you're here, so, you know, I haven't scared you off yet, but we have to ask the question, why study Greek? I would say, for me personally, the greatest benefit I've gotten out of Greek is to slow down and pay attention to details. So most people are not very good Bible readers, right? Because we read too fast. We just blow through what we think we already know. Greek is foreign, right? You're not a native Greek speaker. I'm not a native Greek speaker. So if you're going to learn Greek, you have to work hard at trying to figure out what part of speech is this word I'm looking at? How does it fit in the sentence? How do I make sense of this Greek sentence into English? And it forces you to slow down, and you're paying attention to details at a level that you have never before done. And Greek is fun because it provides more details than in English. So, which is kind of my point too there. The study of Greek helps you sharpen your perspective. It's not original with me. I don't know who first invented it, but they often use the illustration that reading the New Testament in Greek is kind of like watching TV in HD color versus black and white. You can still get the image, right? You can get the idea. You can watch a movie in black and white. Nothing wrong with that. But you're going to get a lot more detail. It's going to be more enjoyable to watch it in HD color. And it's kind of the same thing reading the New Testament between Greek or English. So you're going to learn a bunch of cool stuff about Greek and how Greek helps you sharpen your perspective. Another thing, and I've really come to appreciate this in the last couple of years, is how Greek helps us learn to see the text from the perspective of the original author. In other words, the original authors were either Greek speakers or they could understand Greek anyway, if it wasn't their native tongue, you know, right? Because most of them are going to be Jewish, unless it's like Luke, you know, he's got the best Greek in the New Testament, right? Is because he's a native Greek speaker. But it helps us understand not only the culture in which they came from, but and this is a little more high level stuff. I'll try to introduce you to it along the way. But you know, you kind of got to know some of the basics of Greek grammar and before you can get into more like intermediate Greek or advanced Greek. But there are ways that the Greek formulates a sentence that is really cool. There's a lot of choice. As we'll see, Greek word order in Greek is very flexible. There is a default word order. There's been a lot of debate on that, but there's a modern consensus of what that is, which verb is actually first in the sentence. That's kind of the agreed upon default word order. And so the point is, anything that is pre-verbal, it's fronted before the verb in the Greek sentence, is it's emphatic in some way, shape, or form. It has a bunch of different reasons why they would do that. And there's about a dozen things we can get lost into. I would recommend if you're at that level or if you want to start reading up on that, it's actually, it's Runge's book. Let me pull that up real quick. But it is Discourse Features of the Greek New Testament. No, Discourse Grammar of the Greek New Testament by Stephen Runge. Runge, Runge. Yeah. Highly recommend that because he starts to introduce you to discourse features, which in my mind, that's my favorite part about Greek. Okay. So we have to learn the Greek before we can get into the discourse features. But, and I'll introduce some as we go, but once you start working at more of the discourse level, it is so much fun. It unlocks a whole lot, like a whole new level of Greek, a whole new layer. Hop in. We're just doing introductory stuff. Jump on in here, guys. We haven't even really started Greek. We're just talking about Greek. All right? Welcome. So, but that's what I mean. When it says Greek helps you learn to see the text from the perspective of the original author, is especially the discourse features, when we get into that, you'll see. But it is... it's such an insight into the mind of the author. In other words, when you read the way he wrote it in Greek, he's showing you what he considered most important in the sentence that he was writing. And that is, to me, that is so cool because it puts me like right alongside the original author as he is writing it. And you can like look over his shoulder and see what it is that he's underlining, what it is that he's, you know, in our day, we have things like bold font, italics, underlining, exclamation points, right? We have all these ways. Now we have emojis, right? we have all these ways to emphasize what we want to emphasize in the text. Well, back then, they didn't have any of that. But they did have discourse features. And so once you learn those, then it's cool because you can see from the perspective of the original author, what they considered most important in the text and what they really want to draw your eyes to and make it obvious. So that's a lot of fun. A couple more points. Some familiarity with the Greek is also very helpful so you can intelligently evaluate the commentaries that are an essential part of your sermon or lesson preparation. Some of you may be working towards that where you're either becoming a pastor, you could be doing sermons regularly, or you're going to do lessons of some sort. Even if you don't do that, I'd encourage you, again, like I said, the Greek for Life book is just dedicate the time and energy to learn it. Use it so you don't lose it. Learn to really appreciate the New Testament in the original Greek. In fact, one of the points I really appreciated out of that Greek for Life book was it said, and I love this comparison, but they said Greek actually saves you time and it makes you more efficient. As a student and as a scholar, and you wonder and you doubt that at first, right? Because you have to dedicate enormous chunks of time in order to get proficient enough at Greek that you can actually put it to work. But once you get to that level, right, there is grunt work involved. There, it takes some, you know, just dedication to get there. But once you get there, then, and really, I mean, if you guys stick through, I mean, I was looking ahead at just kind of what to try and cover. If we're able to even meet 20 to 30 times, you know, between now and next summer, basically through the next two semesters kind of, then I will give you enough that you can, you know, it's basic grammar. So you could actually make sense of the New Testament after this class. You would want to keep working at it and getting way better at it. And then if we have enough interested parties, maybe we'll do a second year of Greek and take it to the next level up. But you can, after 1 year of Greek, most people, in 1 year of Greek, you can read the Greek New Testament on your own. You can make sense of it. After a couple years, or especially if you take a third year of Greek, then you're just getting into more high-level stuff, and it helps you. But basically, the building blocks are first year Greek, and that's all that this class is going to cover is first year Greek. We'll dabble in some of the second year stuff because it's so fun. It's just interesting. So we're going to talk about that. But once you learn it, the Greek for Life book made the comment that, for every 1 hour you spend in the Greek New Testament, it's worth 10 hours in a commentary. And it's absolutely true. The more, because just, again, spending an hour with the Greek, you're going to understand what the commentators are talking about, and most of the commentaries are debating over what the Greek means. And so if you can read the Greek on your own, then you can bypass a lot of commentators, or at least read the commentary more quickly and understand what it's getting at and make more critical decisions quickly. Yeah.
Why is that, do you think? Is it because, I mean, proper study of the Bible is to study the original intention of the author.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that's why it is so much more valuable than a commentary?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's just because of what you just said. You're studying the original source, because that's all the commentary is doing, yeah, is it studying the original source. But then it's debating over, and you'll start getting familiar the further we go in the class, but like, you know, the participle use or the genitive use of that particular phrase. And so you may read two or three pages of a commentary to try and grasp a concept that if you just read the Greek, knowing Greek, and you read it, like you already understand what the commentary is trying to teach you. And so it's a major time saver once you get to that point. Now, a couple of recommendations, actually. I didn't bring mine, but can I have that real quick? So this is, some of you have this, Zoe, you said you have this. This was required in my undergrad. It's called A Reader's Greek New Testament. It's based off of the UBS text. The cool thing about this is it gives you the Greek text, but then underneath on the bottom, for every word that is, and I always forget, is it 50 times or 30 times? 50 times or less. So it appears 50 times or less in the New Testament. It gives you the gloss on the bottom. Now, the point is,
that's the Reader's Greek New Testament.
Reader's Greek New Testament. So the biggest thing that slows people down in reading the New Testament is vocabulary. Because there's something like 5,000 words or something in the Greek New Testament, you know, different vocabulary words. And most people just aren't going to take the time to learn 5,000 new words. However, what is ingenious about this is that if you can learn, and I'll give you vocabulary sheets, in fact, since we're talking about it. So this, you want to just help take one fast round. So this vocabulary sheet is overkill, all right? This is not, so don't like cry when you get this, okay? It's not that bad, okay? We're really only going to focus on the first 300 words is what I'm trying to tell you. This full list is, so like if you get into like fourth year Greek, then you're pretty much required to know all these words. And so this is the top, 1,100 words in the New Testament. However, notice they're stapled in pages of two. Just do the top two staples, so the top four pages. I'm giving you the full list just so that you can have it if you want it. And this is going to be your primary vocabulary for the New Testament. But just look at the first two staples. So it's four pages. And that's going to take you to 308 words. All right? So this is, I'm encouraging you in the next 20, 30 times that we meet. It's not going to be that many times. I have to go back and look. I think it was like 20, yeah, almost 30 times. If we meet all the way through like May, then maybe we can actually maybe squeeze in 30 times. But what I would encourage you is to just commit. If this was a four credit course, you would be required. And some of you might take it for credit because it might function as a high school credit. I've been talking to your mom. So if that's the case, you have to take it. You have to take quizzes and stuff, and then everyone can have fun if you take a quiz if you want. But I would suggest try to commit to just learning 10 new words a week. All right, it's not that hard. 10's pretty manageable. If you're a diligent student, then great, up it. And you can go farther. But the point is, if you in just the course of this class can master the top 300 words, the most frequently used words in the New Testament, and you get to 300, then you can use this Greek New Testament, because I think it's going to give you the top, I think it requires, if you know the top 313, I think, is what it requires, and then it will supply on the bottom every other word that you don't know. But here's the kicker. If you know those 300 words, then you can read, like, it's something like 74% of the New Testament. You can make sense of the, like, vast majority. You will recognize 4 out of every 5 words on the page if you just master the top 300 words. Okay, so it's not that big a deal. That's in first year Greek. That's what the big goal is just to teach you vocab, the top 300 words. And I cannot stress this enough. It's true in Greek. It's true in Hebrew. But if vocab is absolutely essential, like if you can, you know, work that, then it's easier. Like you will work on, you know, verb charts and, you know, noun case endings, that sort of thing. But those are going to become second nature. After you spend a little more time in the Greek New Testament, you're just going to start recognizing what case a noun is in or what, you know, is the mood or person number of the verb. You'll figure that out pretty quick. But the vocab is the thing that's going to trip you up every time. If you just look at, you're staring at the word, you're like, I don't know what that means, you know, then it's frustrating and it slows you down and it makes you give up pretty quickly. But if you can master, again, 300 words, just a few over, 313, I think is what they call it for, then it really does make reading easier, more fun. It's easier to keep up with. And then you just, you know, if you just start reading the New Testament, then you pick up vocabulary as you go, you know, and before long, you know, like I think, I don't know in my, well, you can see my highlighted portion. In my academic career, this was my list that I had to work off of. See, I don't have the whole thing memorized, but like I went up to, I think the top 600 words is where I'm at. So like 300 is the required for first year, but once you're into second, third year, you know, then you just keep going. You always are working on vocabulary. And I think I'm up to the top 600 or 700. But I haven't mastered this whole list. But as you read the New Testament, you're going, like I probably have a functional vocabulary larger than that because I just read the New Testament. So it's like you're going to come across those words. You come across them often enough, they stick, right? That's just the way it is. So I would encourage you to do that, and then I'll follow up if you're taking this for officially for credit or not. But if so, then I can generate quizzes. They're really easy. You know, vocab quizzes of, you know, 10, 15 words or something per class. And then all you do is just test yourself, right? And just say, okay, do I know those 10 or 15 words? And I'll just go in order, you know, where we start at the beginning and first 10 words. And then second week, you need to know 20 words. Third week, 30 words, right?
That's, will that be time?
Yeah, that's right. Yes. And I'm going to breathe down your neck. No. I won't do that. But the last point I want to make just about why studying Greek is a great benefit in knowing Greek is not the clever insights, golden nuggets. Now, there are some really cool stuff we'll talk about. The golden nuggets are a lot of fun. But that's not the primary reason you learn Greek, is to find those little nuggets. Rather, it's the greatest value is perhaps helping you understand what the text does not mean. One of the things you're going to find out as you study Greek is I have a very high respect for translators. Okay, translation is hard, and there's a lot of options. It's not a science. There's, you know, some hard and fast facts involved, but it's just as much as of an art as a science in a lot of ways, is how you translate a particular phrase. And that's why there's so much difference. Oh, thank you, Grant. Someone's trying to get in that door.
I think it's Elisa.
Okay.
Because I texted her and says, there's no prerequisites.
Good, good.
So she said, okay, I'll sneak in.
Well done. Yeah, and that was not sneaky. Not very sneaky. But you have a partner now, right? Someone can sit next to you and be the other female.
I knew we needed another girl here.
So. We needed another female in the class. So,
yeah, I got her.
Oh, you already got her?
Okay. Yeah, I got her. We needed
cool. There you go. There's the vocab list. That's right. So just to finish that thought, the great benefit of knowing Greek is not the clever insights, but the understanding of what the text does not mean. So Greek is going to give you an array of possible options. It's going to eliminate some options. So like, for instance, this is where the cults come in really famously. You know, we could spend a lot of time, you know, beating up on the cults in particular. Jehovah's Witness are easy targets because they're terrible translators. Okay, they're bad at Greek. And so the point is, you can, knowing a little Greek, you can quickly realize, okay, they, like, you can eliminate what it doesn't mean. Does that make sense? But it doesn't necessarily solve all your problems, because you're still going to have, you know, two or three options of what it can mean. And so that's where you have to just keep reading, get better at Greek, read the whole Bible, not just one verse, because the Bible corrects itself and, you know, instructs itself. You know, the Bible teaches us how to understand the rest of the Bible. And so that's very important for us to understand. So, but the point is, I really want to just try to infect you with the love of New Testament Greek, okay? That's the point. It really is fun, and it does take some work, and it takes some commitment, but it is totally worth the effort. And once you gain, then maintain. It's way easier to maintain than to let it die and have to resurrect it later. But encouragement. Also, if you do let it die, for some of you who've taken Greek before, and maybe you haven't been up on, you know, all your Greek, and it comes back really quick. That's like, I think, chapter 2 in Greek for Life, the Greek for Life book. Is it's just like, you know, it's kind of like riding a bike. It might take you a little bit of work to resurrect it, but it comes back in half the time. It's, you know, and probably less, you know, and like maybe a third of the effort, and boom, you can get it right back. But it is indeed worth it. Okay, so with that said, let me just introduce you real quick. I'm not going to spend long with this, but I always get this question. What is Koine Greek? Because the New Testament is written in Koine Greek. Koine Greek is not modern Greek. That's different. It is a Proto-Indo-European language. Just to show you, do you see it's highlighted on the screen? Koine Greek, basically the history of what happens is you have Hellenic, pre-Homer Greek, classical Greek. Classical Greek is what most of your Greek, you know, again, the classics, as we call it, they're all written in classical Greek. Okay, so that is basically, it's way harder. Okay, Koine is dumbed down Greek. And the reason it's dumbed down is because what happened between classical Greek and Koine Greek is classical Greek was the language of Alexander the Great. Okay, Alexander conquers the world. And what happens is he forces right, the rest of the world to become Greek speakers. But what happens when Greek is not your native tongue? It's hard. Like, I'm going to teach you 4 cases of Greek. But if we were to go study classical Greek, there's 8 cases. All right? And you're like, holy cow, what is going on with it? You know, it's so much more complicated. But Koine, they just start chucking stuff that is unnecessary to the language because it's non-native speakers that are trying to learn Greek. And so it's Greek for dummies. Okay, that's kind of what it, and I'm very thankful for that. Okay, so, but what it does is it's the masses are starting to learn Greek. And so it is, Koine is also known as common Greek. It's kind of like, it's just the normal run-of-the-mill person on the street in the Greek-dominated empire after the conquest of Alexander the Great. That is, and it really takes off. It becomes the trade language. It becomes a very strong, dominant language for a long time. And that's why the New Testament is written in it. Because that was a very strong median of the day. Was, you know, most people could read Greek. Not as many people could read Hebrew, right? So, and again, there's some debate on that. Some think Matthew might have been originally written in Hebrew and translated into Greek. But most of the New Testament is written in Greek originally, if not translated into Greek so that it could be spread around the Mediterranean world because everybody could read Greek. Not as many people could read Hebrew. Yeah.
So in the Roman Empire, first century Roman Empire, what were most people bilingual in that they spoke Aramaic and Greek?
Yeah.
What made the difference to what why they would choose to speak in one versus the other? I mean, was it a cultural thing?
Yeah, so it's all about just the politics of your local area. So in the Roman Empire,
why did they choose to write most of the New Testament in Greek versus Aramaic?
Yeah, so it's a wider audience. Okay. So Aramaic was going to be largely confined to Syria and Palestine.
Okay.
And so the rest of the Roman world wasn't going to read Aramaic.
Okay.
But they could all read Greek. And Latin, you know, was... Greek was just around longer than, you know, because Latin came in later with the Romans, but Greek was still much more widespread and widely used than even Latin. Now, again, so the Bible's originally, the New Testament is originally written in Greek, but then it's going to be translated into, you know, a bunch of different languages, right? Coptic and some of our, and Syriac, and, you know, we're going to have Latin translations early on, like really quick. And so we have a lot of old translations, but the original language was Greek. Yeah. But it appeals to a broader audience, all right? So, but with that said, it is going to be, it's a little easier to learn, okay? Koine Greek is way easier than classical Greek. And so that helps us out. But it is really interesting. That's high-level stuff, so we're not going to get into that very much. But if you master Koine Greek, it is really interesting, especially in word studies, to start dipping into classical Greek, because they have a huge body of material, a corpus of material that you can study, you can read, you can search. And it really helps you become a better Greek reader when you read outside the New Testament as well. But that's like fourth level, you know, fourth year Greek kind of stuff. Is they start forcing you outside of the New Testament to read other Greek works. But it just makes you a better Greek reader, which helps you read your New Testament. So it all reinforces itself. But with that said, our goal today is to start right at the beginning. So who wants to take a stab at this? In the Greek, someone read for me the Greek sentence that is right in front of you. What is that? Anyone want to be brave? Andrew, I so admire your bravery. I admire your bravery. Okay.
Krator.
Good. Well done. Yeah, give him a hand. Well done. Way to take the hit for the rest of them. Okay. So does anyone recognize that? That's a Bible verse. What verse is that? Give it your best guess. Can anyone take a stab at it? What do you got?
Is it John 1:1?
Good guess. I almost put John 1:1 in there first, but no, it's not John 1:1. So, anyone know ego eimi or eimi? Ego eimi, I am ta. So just so it's ta, not toe. The O is the omega sound. A is the omicron. We'll talk about that tonight. Ego eimi ta alpha kai ta omega. I am the alpha and the omega. Lege kurias, says the Lord. Ha theos, the God. Ha on, the one who was, or excuse me, the one who is, and the one who was, and the one who is coming, erkomenos. And then that big, long, tough word at the end is the Almighty. The Almighty. So, I am the Alpha, the Omega, says the Lord God, the one who is, who was, who is coming, the Almighty. All right, that is Revelation chapter 1 and verse 8. So, well done. You all just read your first sentence in Greek. But, of course, you're familiar with it, right? But it's Alpha and Omega. You're familiar with it? That's the first and final letters of the Greek alphabet. So, this is the Greek alphabet. It's honestly not that hard to learn because it's very similar to the English alphabet. Because the English alphabet's based off of you know, the Greek and Latin, and, you know, it's in the family. So we're going to work on this real quick and then do a couple of exercises that just kind of help us, if I can get the audio to work, because it sometimes does, sometimes doesn't. My internet signal in here is a little bit sketchy. Okay, but alpha is A, B, G, so it's alpha, beta, so that's a B sound. Gamma, that's your G. It's like a hard G sound. Delta, that would be your D sound. Epsilon, E. Zeta, that's a Z sound. Eta, that's kind of like a long E. Like, so like the word I ate, A, A. All right, so it's like a long E. Well, it's transliterated with an E, but it's actually more like a long A sound for us. Theta, that's a TH. TH, theta. Iota, that would be your I. Kappa, K, lambda, that's your L sound, mu, nu, that's your M and your N, xi, that's your X sound, right? So it's called a xi. Omicron, that's like your short O, like an ah. Then you have pi, right? So if you've taken any math, that's pretty easy to recognize, right? You got your pi symbol. That's your P sound. Now, this one throws a lot of new beginners off. Is the pi symbol is the P sound. The one that looks like a P, an English P, is actually a Greek letter rho. So that's an R sound. Okay, so that trips up most people right away. Is they're like, oh, you know, you see that and your head says P, but it's actually an R. And so you got to try and work on the pronunciation there. The sigma, which is the S sound, has two different forms. Do you know the difference? You remember? You know the difference.
The last one ends a word.
There you go. So the first sigma, which almost looks like a, I don't know, when I was a kid and I learned cursive, that was kind of like an O, and then you had to put a little tail onto it to the next, you know, letter. So that's kind of like a cursive O almost. That's your sigma if the letter appears in the middle of a word. If the sigma is the end of the word, it's the full S. But the S isn't like an English S. I mean, it looks just like an English S, but the tail drops below the line. All right? Yeah.
What about the beginning? How does that work?
It's still the other S, not the final S, the first sigma. Yeah, at the beginning of a word, unless it's capital. I'm just showing you the lowercase. The capital are similar, I should have included those, but I did not in this slide. But the capital letters, most of them are going to look pretty similar. There's a couple that when it goes capital, it actually has a little bit different form. But those are pretty rare in the New Testament, honestly. It's really just the beginning of a sentence and then like proper names. They'll have capitals. Otherwise, it's all lowercase in most editions of the Greek New Testament. So mainly you're going to be dealing with lowercase. But it looks pretty familiar, doesn't it? I mean, you can really sing the ABC song and pretty much get whatever, you know, 80% of it right, you know, and it's even in the similar order. There's a little bit of difference. So really, the primary thing I want you to know today is just the pronunciation, and so that we can practice reading Greek, and you can start, because honestly, I would encourage you to learn to read Greek and read it out loud, especially when you're doing vocab words. Because what you're going to discover is there's a number, well, not only does it help you learn, because, you know, not just visual, but audible learning is very helpful. But when you start hearing the words, it helps stick. But you'll also discover if you pronounce it right, there's a lot of Greek words that appear in English. Or it's the root of an English word. And so it actually is really helpful. And it's kind of, you know, so like, anyone know, some of you, the Greek word akouo. Akouo is a verb and it means I hear. Well, guess what English word comes from akouo?
Acoustics,
exactly. And so you're like, what? That's so cool, right? And so like I told you this morning, like cataclysm, that's actually a Greek word. We just drag it straight into English. We just change the letters from Greek letters to English letters, but it's actually a Greek word. And there's a lot of those. And so it's kind of fun. It's really not as hard as you think. As in fact, if you studied some of, anyone in here study Hebrew? You didn't do any Hebrew? Okay, that's okay. So Hebrew is more, I don't know. I actually think Hebrew is easier than Greek because there's fewer rules. There's less to know in Hebrew than in Greek, but it's foreign. The letters are way different. You're reading from right to left. It's just like, whoa, it's major brain tease, right, to read Hebrew. But it's just more foreign. But when you read and start studying Greek, it actually is not that foreign because, you know, English is just kind of a distant cousin, right, to Greek. There's a lot of overlap, especially, you know, as you kind of go through Greek into Latin, it's kind of helpful. Now, I'm going to give you a different slide in a minute, but guess what are the vowels, do you think? Let's just quick divide between consonants and vowels. Don't overthink it. They're the same as in English. Exactly. So, A-E-I-O-U. And then you have to do the long as well. So an eta,
and then an omega. So basically, your alpha is a vowel. Beta, gamma, delta are consonants. Epsilon, that's a vowel. Zeta is a consonant. Eta is a vowel. So it's just think, again, short A, long A, kind of, you know. Theta is a consonant. Iota, that's a vowel. Kappa, lambda, mu, nu, xi, those are all consonants. Then you have omicron, that's a vowel. So it's the same vowels as in English. Pi and rho, sigma, tau, tau is the T, those are all consonants. Then upsilon, that's a vowel, just like an English U. Then you have phi, chi, psi, omega. Omega is your final vowel. It's like a long, long O, omega. So I didn't quite finish. So we started with the, or we kind of got sidetracked with sigma. But then you have tau, upsilon, phi, that's a PH sound, or an F, kind of. And then chi, or chi, that's the X-looking thing. And some will put a rough breather on that, so it's actually like a chi, you know? It's almost Hebrew. It kind of, it's got a rough breather on it. Then you have your psi, that's your PS. Psi. And then omega is your final one. All right, so any questions on the alphabet? I know you're, and I can even, if you're interested, and it's not hard to find these. I can also make some suggestions. John's not here. He'll be here in a little bit. He said he'd be a little late today, but there's also some really cool apps John uses. I use Quizlet, but I'm like old school. So there's newer versions that are like more hip, I guess. I don't know. But there's actually some really cool particularly New Testament Greek apps that are kind of neat, and you can actually put in your like your range of which text you're reading. And because a lot of our translating and reading, like at the beginning, I'm just going to be all over the New Testament showing you examples of stuff. But most people, when they start reading Greek, does anyone know what's the easiest Greek in the New Testament? That's right, it's John. So anything John wrote, okay? Mainly the Gospel of John and then 1 John. That's normally where you start. 2nd and 3rd John are short, but they also contain like big names, you know, that are harder to read and, you know, a couple of words that aren't as familiar, but 2nd and 3rd John are pretty easy. Revelation is honestly easy. It just has a lot of vocabulary that's not as familiar, right? So, but John is really the place to start. And that's if you start reading and you're just like, I just want to practice reading Greek. I would encourage you to get a Greek New Testament. You can do it digitally. There's free ones all over the place. If you want a hard copy, I already made this suggestion. The Reader's Greek New Testament is probably what I would recommend for most new Greek readers, Greek students, is because it helps you out with the vocab on the bottom. The other thing is this is called the NA28, the Nestle Aland 28th edition. This is for hoity-toity academics. You're required to do this. And the reason is because it has a text-critical apparatus on the bottom. We'll talk about that later if you're interested. But basically, this is where it's not vocab on the bottom. It's your text-critical apparatus. And so what that means is it's comparing all your manuscripts that we have in Greek, the Greek manuscripts, and it's telling you which readings up here appear in which manuscripts down here. Okay? It's a lot of really cool information, but it's very niche. You know, most people don't even care. Okay? And they're like, it's cluttered. I don't want to read that. And so this is required at like grad level Greek is the NA28. So if you're interested, by all means, get one. And it
suggests a lexicon.
So the standard lexicon, and it's not cheap. But the standard is called BDAG. It's this puppy right here.
Would you suggest you get one of those?
If you want to go very far in Greek. Now, I don't have... I left my hard copy. Yeah, right. Because you're hardcore, right?
I just needed the affirmation.
Totally. This is the one to get, okay? Now, this is not as user-friendly, okay? It's bulky. It's got a ton of information that you're not probably interested in right now. The one that I would recommend for beginners is, it's actually called Vines. So it's this one right here. Let me pull up the info on it. So this is, it's Vines Complete Expository Dictionary. That is the most user-friendly because it's actually keyed to English. And it's both Old and New Testament. So it's Hebrew and Greek. And what he does is he looks at an English word, and then he gives you all the different Greek or Hebrew words that are translated into that English word. So you don't even have to know Greek or Hebrew to use that one. You actually are looking up the English word. Now, there's an index in the back. If you want to look up the Greek word, it'll tell you what page it's on. You know, it's not, but that is probably the most user-friendly, and it's readable. It's very excellent scholarship. So I would probably recommend starting there. But if you want to go all the way, definitely BDAG. Like, this is the one where they say if you're stranded on a desert island and you can only pick one Greek lexicon, like, it's this one, right? So this is, that's the big dog, okay? So, and then if you're interested, and these are available online. This is just old school. I had this years ago. I don't use it anymore because I have it all digitally. But this is an interlinear. And this one's Old and New Testament, but an interlinear is where you have the, like, the Greek on top and then the English on the bottom. All right, and so it's just helping you learn as you go. So feel free to, you know, pass these around if you're interested. Take a look and then pass them along. But check those out. But I would say, at the least, try to get your hands on a Greek New Testament. They're not that expensive. They're pretty affordable. If you were only going to pick one, I mean, again, digitally, they're available everywhere. But if you want a hard copy, and hard copies, I don't know, they're fun. But I'd probably recommend the Greek Reader first, just because it helps. It's easier, and it helps you kind of get your legs under you. And then you can graduate to the NA28 at some point if you want to go that into the text critical stuff. But otherwise, you don't even need it. You know, NA28. So questions on the vocabulary, or I'm sorry, the alphabet. Yes, sir.
Just curious. As far as like Alpha and Omega and Revelation, you know, the biblical application behind, like, why Alpha and Omega was used as one of Jesus' names.
Yeah, so it's just, it's an allusion to the alphabet, and the idea is it's, I'm the beginning and the end, right? So it's like, and that's why he backs it up with the next phrase, where I am, we'll learn this later, but the ha-on is actually a participle, it's a substantive participle. On is a participle, meaning being, it's the present tense, being, and then ha is an article, it's the word the, all right? And ha, there's a rough breather, it's that, I'll show you that in just a second. It looks like that apostrophe looking thing on top. That is it's like an H sound. It's a H. And so it's ha-on. That is the one who is, or is in being, present tense being, and then was and is to come. And so the idea is he's eternal, beginning and end. Right?
It's kind of bracketing and then saying, everything that is, I am.
Exactly, exactly. So he's using what to them would be familiar, the Greek alphabet, and it's called, in literary speak, it's called a mirism, where you go, and we say the same thing today, we say from A to Z, right? They would just be saying from Alpha to Omega, right? So it's the same, but it means beginning and end, everything in between. He is all in all, which is where that last word, the Panta Krator, is the Almighty, right? He is the all in all, always. He's always existed, you know, what was and is to come. He's eternal. He's all powerful. All of those ideas are wrapped up in the idea of Alpha and Omega. Yeah, it's good. Excellent. Okay, so I already mentioned this, but here are your long and short Greek vowels. So you already picked it out of the lineup if you were studying away on, you know, the alphabet. It's the same in English. A-E-I-O-U, and the only two additions would be the long vowels. So alpha can have an ah or more of an A sound. epsilon, and then eta would be the long form of the epsilon, a. And then your iota is an I or an E. It can be short or long. Your omicron is short. Omega is long. So it's an A and an O. Omicron, omega. And then your upsilon can have an U or an U sound. It could be short or long. So that's pretty familiar to us as English speakers. But let me introduce to you something a little less familiar. And that is, anyone know what a diphthong is? This is when you take two vowels and you jam them together and they form a third sound. All right? So these are going to be very common in Greek. They're not hard to learn. There's only, what, half a dozen of them? The rare ones, like, are really rare. So, I mean, you can look at them, but you're not going to encounter them that often. The common ones, you're going to see these all the time, is the alpha and iota together is an I sound, as in aisle. So it combines the alpha and the iota into an I sound, aisle. Your epsilon and iota will combine into an A sound, as in the word eight. Eight. So it's an A sound. Your omicron and iota will also combine into an oi sound, like oil, like our English word oil. So they do exist. I just don't know if you've heard that term before, but they do, diphthongs do exist in English, as you can see, but like an aisle, eight, oil. This one is interesting. The upsilon and iota will combine to a hui sound, hui. So what famous Greek word starts with upsilon, iota? Anyone know? You're going to learn this real quick. It's in your vocab. But it's huios, huios, which is the Greek word for sun, right? So the son of God, huios theou. You're going to show up, that's going to show up a bunch of times in the New Testament because it's the son of God. So huios, you'll see that sound a lot, that combination of vowels. Then your alpha and your upsilon will combine into an ow sound, as in cow or like owl in English. So that's an ow sound, alpha, upsilon. Then your epsilon, upsilon will be an U sound, like as in feud, U. Thank you, sir. In fact, give that one back to that's Andrews, actually. Thank you, sir. And then your upsilon and, or I'm sorry, armicon upsilon is U. It's, so the double O. So it's, now that's going to show up a lot too, because there's actually a word, it's a negative particle, but the ooh actually means no or not. So it's actually a negative particle. So you'll see that one all the time. That shows up a lot. Just the omicron upsilon combination, that diphthong. All right, so let's pause there. Let's see if I can get this to work. If it doesn't, then we're just going to ignore it and go back to what we were doing. But there, these can be helpful. This is just a kind of interactive to show up. Here we go. So see if I can get this to work. And you can hear the pronunciation. It's good to think about it.
Alpha.
Alpha.
Beta.
There's your B sound.
Gamma.
G sound. Gamma.
Delta.
And notice this is actually right in the capitals. You see that? Let me actually go back. So alpha is easy, right? That is just like in English. It's an A, capital, lowercase, very familiar to us. B, beta, so there's your capital, just like in English. And then the lowercase, just it looks like a capital B with that little tail on the bottom. That's it. Gamma, it looks like an English Y, the lowercase does, and then like a flipped upside down L, capital L, is the capital gamma. Gamma.
Delta.
There's your delta, capital D. And many of you have probably seen that symbol. Delta symbols, pretty common. We see that around. So that's not unfamiliar. And then your lowercase d, it kind of looks like an English lowercase d, just the tail goes the wrong way, right? You're like, oh, it's weird. But it's pretty easy to recognize. You see it, and you're like, oh, okay, I know what that is. Epsilon, which it didn't speak to us, but epsilon is, again, capital E, then kind of that lowercase d. That's pretty familiar, pretty easily recognizable.
Beta.
Yep. Let's try that again. My internet's slow, so it's sluggish. She doesn't always like it. I see, I won't even do it that time. But that's your Z sound, zeta. So it's a capital Z, just looks normal, like English. But then that one's the weird one to learn how to write in Greek, okay? Is you're just like, what in the world? And so they have this little writing tool. So yeah, you kind of do this little tail down, tail again. You know, that's kind of how you write it. I don't know if that's helpful. I'll do it again. There's your zeta. That one's a little funky to learn how to write, but not too bad.
Eta.
There's your eta, which is capital H. Okay, so the capital, it looks like our capital H. So don't confuse that. It's actually the A sound, the eta.
Theta.
So notice the capital theta looks pretty similar to the lowercase. It just has, it's just bigger, a little more rounded instead of an oval. And then it has, you know, that kind of, it doesn't touch in the middle. It just has that bar kind of in the middle, but it doesn't touch the sides. There's your iota, really similar, capital I. That's just like ours. So this is pretty easily recognizable. Most people are like, okay, no big deal. Like that one's easy.
Kappa.
Again, there's your K sound. Very similar to English, just capital K, lowercase, but it's kappa.
Lambda.
Lambda. So that one's easily confused because it looks like a delta without the bottom on it. All right, the capital lambda can get a little confusing sometimes, but again, it's not common. You're not going to see that much in the New Testament as a capital lambda, but the lowercase one, you're going to see that all the time.
Mu
is your M sound. Again, capital M looks just like in English. Within the lowercase. Same with new. The lowercase, though, that one trips a lot of people up because it looks like a V, right? But it's actually the N sound, the new in Greek. There's your Xi. See, that one's a little funky. Your capital on that one is funky. And most people are like, what is going on? What is happening?
Unlike the lowercase, which isn't funky.
Yeah, that's totally normal. Totally normal. Yeah, here, let's have it write that one. See what that... It's just... Oh, it's so funky. Yeah. So anyway, that's the least normal one, at least to us English speakers. You're like, what is happening? And down here is just giving you examples of different, you know, words on the bottom. Can you see that on the screen?
Yeah.
That start with that letter. Omicron, again, really simple. Looks just like an English O, big and little. Capital, lowercase. Not a problem. But you see actually on the bottom, there's that U, that's no or not. Hos, that's a relative particle. Who, which, what, that. Utas, hati, un, oida. You're going to know all these words by the end of the year. Okay, no big deal. There's your pi again. Same symbol, just again, kind of curves it a little bit, lowercase, but same symbol, uppercase. Really simple on that one. Your rho, and that's even a little bit, I don't know. That font is weird for a lowercase one. Yeah, that's a weird font. It's the tail is going to be straighter most of the time. It's going to look more like a lowercase p, but they have this funky font on there that's not helpful.
Sigma.
Oh, see, it just decides when it's going to work. But There's your sigma. So it looks like a huge kind of E looking thing, but it's actually a sigma. So that one's a little funky when you go capital letters. You're like, oof, man, sigma is actually, you know, it looks more like a epsilon, you know, in some ways, but it's, those are easy to mix up. Which, in fact, I'll show you perhaps later. Maybe, I don't know if I have it tonight, but inscriptions, this is why it's easy to trip up. Like when they're reading a Greek inscription or a manuscript, then it's easy to mix up one letter for the next. There's a couple letters that are really close. And so sometimes that's where some of our copyist errors come into the manuscript tradition, is the letters are really close. And they were written either all capitals or the minuscules are all lowercase. The uncial, if you ever heard that term, the different manuscripts, uncials are written in all uppercase. And those are fewer. Your uncials are more rare. And then your minuscules, that's the lowercase, where every letter is lowercase throughout the whole manuscript.
Tau.
There's your tau. Again, capital T, lowercase, pretty similar. That's easy to recognize.
Upsilon.
Upsilon. So there's your capital Y is actually, or it looks like English capital Y. That's actually an upsilon in Greek, so that's easy to mix up sometimes. Yeah, see, it's not even going to tell us. I'm actually curious if it says phi or phi. I've heard it both ways.
Epsilon.
See if it'll do it.
Phi.
Oh, there it is. Phi, he says. Okay. Phi. So there's your PH sound. Pretty similar. Uppercase, lowercase. Key. Just a, again, very similar. So it just looks like an English X. But it's a CH sound. So it's like the kappa. But the kappa, the key normally has a rough breathing, like it's chi, which I wish he said it, but. And there's your psi. Again, looks like a little trident. The trident symbol. Similar, uppercase, lowercase. And then.
Omega.
There it is. Omega. Okay. So the uppercase omega looks quite a bit different, you know, than the lowercase. That's why it probably tripped you up when you were reading Revelation 1:8. Because it's in uppercase, and that's, we don't see that very often. Yeah, the little, it looks like a W. That's your omega, English W. That's what we're most familiar with. But then the uppercase is kind of flipped over in reverse. So okay, so let's try. I don't know if I can get this one to work or not. I may actually get rid of that real quick. See if this, nope, there we go. Sometimes I have to make it reload. Okay, so this will be just a little practice, which may or may not load because it doesn't like my internet right now. Then this is just, it's kind of a fun, just a quiz format, maybe. Yeah, I'm not going to waste my time with it if it doesn't work. But it's kind of nice to just quiz yourself. So I'm going to just let that load. So let's actually, let's go back to this real quick. And I need another volunteer. Who now that you are masters of the Greek alphabet, someone take a stab at it. Somebody be brave, take a stab at it, and pronounce the first line of the Greek text of Revelation 1:8. If nobody volunteers, I just start calling on you. Okay. Okay, Grant. First line, give it to us. So what's the first letter?
That's the epsilon.
Good. And then that, what's the second letter?
Gamma, omega.
Good. So how would you say that first word?
Ego.
Good. Okay. So actually, let's just do a word at a time. It's a little less intimidating. All right. Eric, your turn. Second word. On the screen. This one's a little tougher because you have a diphthong in there. All right.
So you have two vowels that are combining. How would you pronounce the second word? We'll skip Andrew because he was brave and did the whole verse a minute ago. Well done. So it's a little tricky. The diphthong, remember, is the A sound. So it's a combination of the epsilon and iota. And then what's the third letter? Mu. Mu. Good. So there's your M sound. And then what's your final letter of the second word?
Iota.
Good. So that would be a mi. A mi. Good. Okay, so this one's easy. Okay. Third letter, or a third word. You got two letters. What?
Two?
That's how you'd say it in English. But so the omicron's an ah sound, so it's ta. Ta. So it's a tau omicron. See that? So the third letter or third word, ta. And that's your, it's actually a neuter article. We'll talk about that later, but it's just the word the. So ego, a me, I am. In fact, it's emphatic. We'll talk about this later. It's I myself am the. Okay, this was super easy. You got to do the next one. What is it?
Alpha.
Oh, well done. Wow, you Greek scholar, you. Alpha, good job. Okay, let's go back.
I want to
go. Yeah, too late. Too late. He took alpha from you. What's the next one?
Oh, my gosh. This is all Greek to me.
Yeah. I was waiting for that one. Good. So it's a kappa. I guess just can you identify the letters?
So let's see.
So the word after alpha.
Yeah. Is lamma? Is it start with lamma or is that?
That's kappa.
That's a kappa.
Yep. That's a kappa. So it's your K sound.
Oh, okay.
Kappa, and then.
Epsilon? No.
Nope. Alpha. Kappa, alpha. And then we'll talk about that accent mark in just a second. That was actually my next slide. We'll talk about accents real quick. But that's an iota on the end with an accent on top. Is that recognizable? So add all that together. What would you say? Kappa, alpha, iota. This is another diphthong. It's a combination. All right, so it's easy to trip us up. Because remember, the alpha. Yeah, right. I gave you a hard one. Alpha, iota. Remember, it's the I, as in aisle. I sound. So that would be chi. Chi. All right? Everyone say that together? Chi. Well done. Well done. Chi. That is the, translate that into English, it is the word and. And. All right? Okay, well, you got a next. James, you got an easy one because we almost should skip. You should do the next two. There we go. All right, so you have chi. What's the next word?
Ta omega.
Ta omega. Well done. See, you just breezed through that, you Greek scholar. All right, okay. Okay, Eric, give us your best shot. What's the next one? So the first letter, could you recognize the letters at all? That's okay.
I'm going to tell you, go back to the letter slide. I'm going to take a picture of
it. Oh, yes, right there. You can. Go ahead, take a picture. Feel free to do so. Yeah. What's that?
That's a good idea.
Oh, yeah, take a picture.
Oh, yeah, I wrote it down, but it doesn't look good to do.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's like a doctor wrote it down.
Yeah, I was going to say, with doctor handwriting, good luck with that.
So mine goes into Latin and then back to English.
So, yeah, let's go back. So, back to, so it's the second word, second line is, nope, there is a gamma in it, but that's the third letter is gamma. First letter is lambda. Well done. So it's a L, you know, sound, L sound. And then what's the second letter?
Epsilon.
Epsilon. Good. Yep, so it's a le, and then you have your gamma, which is your G sound, and then your epsilon iota combined to a, that's another diphthong,
I'm telling you, you'll see those all over the place. It's your A sound. So think Canadian. Eh? Yeah. Eh? All right.
Nobody said anything about Canadian.
Yeah, that's right. Wrong class. That's down the hall. No. So put all that together. How would you say that? Well done, Legay.
Yeah.
Well done. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Now you got a little harder one. Can you do the next word? Third word. Second line.
The first letter is a kappa, right?
Yep. Excellent. Kappa.
The next one is... I can't see it without my glasses.
It's upsilon. It's, so it's the U sound. U. And then third letter. Here. Actually, I can zoom in a little bit if that would help. Sorry. There we go. That's a little better. Excellent. Yep, because it looks like a P, an English P, and it always trips us up. But it's an R. It's an R sound. It's a row. Excellent. Yep, excellent. Yep, and then what's that final letter? It changes form when it's on the final letter of the word.
Sigma.
Excellent. Sigma. Good. So how would you pronounce the whole word? Give it a shot.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Oh, somebody said it. Was it you? Say it again.
Curios?
Yep. Curios. Ah, yeah. Because curios would be more like an omega sound. O. So it's an omicron, so it's curios. 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 Okay, well, we'll make her do the next two. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so I actually haven't taught you the rough breather. I mentioned it. But the next word, we'll do the next two.
Oh.
Because one's just one letter.
Oeos.
Say it again.
So, Oeos, is it?
So it's two words. So it's a, and that's the rough breather. I'm going to teach you that in a minute. So this isn't really fair, but the omicron with a rough breather on top. So it looks like an apostrophe kind of facing the other way. Do you see that? It's like a reverse apostrophe. That's an H sound. And then your O, your omicron is an ah, right? So it would be ha, ha. That's your the. And then the next word. No. So that the first one is a, what's the first letter in there?
Theta.
Okay. Yeah, it's a theta. Good. T-H.
Yes.
Good. So there's two syllables there. So you'd actually say theos.
Theos.
Theos. And that's the word for God. That's right. That's why we call it theology.
Theology.
Theology. Yep. Theology is a Greek word. It's the study of God. It's theos, logos, jammed together. Theology is Greek. So good. So theos. All right. And then ha. Okay. We'll give you that one. Actually, are you game? How good are you in your pronunciation? Can you do the next two lines? The last two lines?
Sure.
Go for it.
Ha, on, ke, ha, en, ke, ha, erkomenos, ha, pantakrator.
Good. That's a tough one. Pantakrator. Pantakrator.
Okay, she's out of here.
Yeah, I was going to say. She's way too advanced for you guys. Yeah, right. Good. Good. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, her endurance level is way higher. No, okay, so good. Only a couple corrections. It's Kai. How'd you say it? I think you said K. I think you might, however you said it. Yeah, K. So it's Kai. Because the alpha iota is an I sound. So it's chi, ha, ein, chi, ha. And then you actually did really good on the archamen, but it would be os, not os. So it's archamenos. It's easy. Everyone slips into that because the O, we make it long, but that's actually a different letter. That's the omega.
Yeah, so what's the significant difference in the ha and os?
Just different. It's a different letter.
Like when it, the word ends and you correct and say, no, actually that would be pronounced os. How do you know when it's pronounced os versus os?
So if it's an omicron, it's always ah. And then if it's an omega, so like the final word, the Panta Krator, that's a long O because it's an omega at the end, or, and then it ends with an R. So it's Panta Krator. Does that make sense? So it's a totally different letter. So the A is Omicron, O is omega. It's that W looking okay. Letter. Yeah.
Is it Ercomenos or Arcomenos?
Air, you're right.
Okay.
What did I say? Did I say R?
I think you said R.
It's air, you're right. It's Ercomenos. Ercomenos. Yeah, sorry if I said R, then I'm totally messing you up. It's air. You're right. No, because it's an epsilon. Ercomenos. Good. Excellent. Man, you guys are so good at this. Okay. So let me talk breathing marks real quick. So accent, breathing marks, other marks. I'll cover this real quick. We'll do a little bit more pronunciation practice. And then we'll be probably close to done for today. So just a couple other things you need to know if you're going to start reading. And I would suggest if you just pick up a New Testament and start reading, probably start somewhere in the writings of John. Just pick somewhere. But it's typically the easiest Greek, easiest vocabulary. It's a good place to start. So in Greek, you have three accent marks. You have the acute, the circumflex, and the grave. Okay. Normally, so just kind of try to memorize those. They're inside the parentheses there. It's just these little accent marks. There's not a full apostrophe or the rough breather, which is like the opposite apostrophe. But normally, a word will only have one accent. Normally. It shows you where to put the emphasis on pronunciation. Okay? So, like I said before, I don't want to go off that slide too quickly, but remember theos? So theos is the word for God, but the accent was over the omicron. All right, so it's, so back here. So back to theos. So it's not theos, it's actually theos is the more correct way of putting it.
So the accent is on the os?
Correct, wherever the accent os. Mark is. Yep, so here it's over the omicron. So the final word, it's a tough one, so it's actually Panta Krator is how you'd say that. Because you go, ah, right? You put the emphasis where the accent mark is. You see that? So that just takes a little bit of time to practice your pronunciation. I really encourage you to read out loud. It's really helpful. You're going to sound like an idiot at first and just get over it. All right, I mean, it's great.
That's why we do it alone. Right?
Yeah, do it alone. That's right. But then before long, you guys are going to sound like native Greek speakers. It's great. So normally, again, back to our accent marks, normally a word will only have one accent. It shows you where to put the emphasis in pronunciation. Occasionally, an accent differentiates spelling. So it is important. Sometimes people are like, oh, an accent mark doesn't matter. Well, for a few words, it does. It actually distinguishes two different words in several situations. So like the tis, see that, is actually the word who. It has an accent mark. It's the question. It's a interrogative pronoun, it's the word who, question mark. But then tis, without the accent mark, is actually an indefinite pronoun. It's the word someone. All right, so.
Could you pronounce those exactly the same?
Or? Yeah, you'd pronounce them the same, tis. Okay. Yep. So it's really, if you're speaking it, context matters, right? If you're reading it, you can see the accent mark there or not there. And it's always easy, well, I'll talk about it later, but it's the thing that always helps me out is you always just ask the question, which one has the accent mark, right? But by just, did they teach you that? Which one has the accent mark? And by asking the question, you answer it, right? So the one with the accent mark is the question. It's the interrogative, all right? Does that make sense? Well, that's a helpful little tidbit. You'll learn that later. But then you have the feminine singular nominative article, hey. That's the word the, but then it's distinguished from the pronoun hey, which has the rough breather and an accent mark. So there's actually, you know, two marks above it. That's a different word. That's the word who, which. It's a pronoun, relative pronoun. but it also distinguishes it from the conjunction A. That's confusing, right? But the point is, the markers above do matter, right? So if it's a rough breather, if it's an accent mark, if there's one, if there's two, occasionally they do change the word. So just kind of pay attention to that. We'll see as we go. You'll get used to that as we go. The more reading you do, it becomes second nature pretty quick. Sorry, I don't want to move too quick. You need to take a picture. Feel free to take a picture. Because I don't want to move off too quickly off of a slide. But I'm going to do a little bit more pronunciation practice. Yeah, your flash is on. I know. It's really bright in here. Oh, that's good. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Okay, so there is... So like in the other one, the accent mark for theos was over the omicron. Here, it's actually over the epsilon. So it's theos, not theos. And it changes depending on what the next word is. Because it's originally... And we're not going to get into accenting very deeply because it's really complicated and really fast. If you're a native speaker, it just happens, right? Because you hear it, you're used to it. And so we do the same thing in English. We might change, the pronunciation or an emphasis of a word depending on which word comes next, because certain sounds just rebel when you put them together. They just don't fit. And so that will change sometimes. But like the first one, you see it, is theos. So it's two syllables. And the syllables basically, like in English, kind of follow the vowels. So you have theos, that means God. But then what's the next one? Who wants to give a stab at it? It's actually the word for scripture. We'll just start back over the beginning. Back over here, Grant. What's the second word? How would you say that? Good. Gra, fourth letter is a phi.
Oh, I keep getting that one wrong.
Yeah, it's not normal, to our eyes.
Grafe.
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 Guess what English word we get from grafe?
Graphite.
Graphite. Why do we call it graphite? Because
it can graph.
Because you write with it. Exactly. Isn't it cool? There's so many English words that it actually helps you as you're reading English. You're like, or reading Greek, you're like, oh, I know that word. But so graphe, but notice where's the accent mark? Second syllable, graphe. So it's not graphe, it's graphe. Okay, third word. You know this one, Andrew. Third word.
Oikos.
Oikos. I said this one in the sermon today, right? Oikos is house or household. All right, so that is where that's the yogurt is the oikos. Okay, good, oikos. Okay, Eric. Eric 1, Eric 2. Are we going to do Eric the elder and Eric the younger? Is that what? Okay. Yeah, okay, so.
Aren't they
involved
in the story? Eric the younger?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Good point. We have a couple scholars here. Okay, fourth word. That's probably the toughest one on the list. So I've given you a couple tough ones. So how would you say that one? Fourth word. First letter.
Basileia.
Whoa, nailed it. Well done. Basileia. So notice there's actually four syllables there. Basileia. Good. But the emphasis is on the third syllable because that's where the accent mark, right? Basileia. Basileia. Kingdom. Good job. Okay, next one.
Thranos.
Excellent. Thranos. What do you think that means, right? I mean, it's on the screen, but that was not too hard, right? Throne, right? Thranos, throne. Okay, that one's easy. Next. You got the name?
Kletos?
Kletos, good. Or Kletos. Kletos. Because the os would be if it was an omega.
Okay.
Right? So with the omicron, it's Kletos. Kletos. So again, the emphasis is on the second syllable. Kletos. Excellent. Well done. Okay.
Jeff,
yes, sir.
Where would there be an example of Kletos? I mean, because we have sent, we have apostle.
Mm-hmm.
Clytos, where would that show up?
In so,
how would recognize?
Yeah, so the called. So, so like Paul talks about saints as being chosen and called.
Oh, okay.
So the called would be, you know, ha kletos.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Excellent. Okay, just a couple more things that you need before you can master the reading. And again, right now, work, you know, between now and next class, just work on vocab. You got to know 10 words by next week. But also, just start practicing your reading. So just like open up a Greek New Testament. And really, you can go anywhere. And, you know, I mean, you can go to John if you want. But just go anywhere and just start practicing the pronunciation if you, you know, can smooth that out. But Greek has two breathing marks. So we said there's kind of three accents, two breathing marks. There's a smooth breather and a rough breather. The smooth breather looks like an apostrophe. It doesn't matter, right? I mean, in other words, it doesn't, you don't sound it out, okay? It has no impact on pronunciation, so don't worry about it. But the rough breather is the H sound. That one's important. It shows up quite a bit. And that looks like an apostrophe, but it's backwards. Is that, can you see that well enough? I need to zoom in on that. So that's like in a kind of a backwards apostrophe there. So breathing marks always are found over initial vowels. In other words, if a word begins with a vowel, a diphthong, which is just two vowels jammed together, or a row, then it puts a rough breather on it. Because it's hard to start, you know, in pronunciation, especially spoken, you know, and distinguish it with your ear. It's hard to start a word with a vowel. And so they would put a rough breather on it to help you hear the next word. The smooth breathing mark is not pronounced, don't worry about it. However, the rough breathing mark is pronounced like the H sound. A row beginning a word always has a rough breathing mark. Thus, how would you pronounce that? Who's up next? Where are we at? The U, Corey? So it's that Greek word right there. Starts with an eta. Whoops. Yeah, right there. How would you pronounce that word?
Raw.
Oh, sorry. The one above, you're reading row up here. Yeah, so not row there, but this one right there. Okay. Oh, you can kind of see my cursor.
Anthropos. Anthropos?
Wrong one. Oh, well, that's the bottom. Sorry. You're right. Anthropos. Well done. Well done. Sorry, the one in...
I can't see your arrow.
Oh, okay, my arrow's not big enough, sorry.
Okay.
There we go, the Greek one, the one written in Greek letters.
Let's go back to Anthropos.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we should just give you that one. I mean, that's actually pretty good. You read the transliteration, but, you know, no big deal. So Anthropos, that's what it would look like in Greek, is Anthropos. See it kind of at the bottom?
Okay.
You see that? I should actually get my... I don't know if my highlighter is going to work here, but... So there is Anthropos right there. But then read this one for us.
Oh, that's helpful. I can see what you're
now doing. That I circled it, it's helpful?
I'm on the same page now.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, you almost got it. Somebody said it. So rough breather, so it would be an H, then the eta, mu, epsilon, rho, alpha. So it would be, anyone got it? Hemera. Good. Hemera. Good. Excellent. Okay. So just to reinforce those with more examples. So the rho, notice the first word on the top. Whose turn is it? James. How would you pronounce that? So it's a little tricky because it's a rough breather with a row. Rhema. Good. Rhema. It's the word for word, but more so the spoken word. Logos is the word for written word. And then second one, okay, Eric the Elder. I love it, because from where I sit, you guys are like right in line with each other. It's perfect.
You didn't realize you were going to be
Yeah, that's right. Eric the Distinguished. No. Okay, second word. What's that one? You're going to be really excited when you read it. All right? Because you guys, when you discover what word it is, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. So notice it does not have a rough breather. It's the smooth breather. So you don't pronounce that, but it has to put a accent on it because it starts with a vowel. So it starts with, what's the vowel? It's a capital.
Is it I?
Yep, I, iota. Good.
Okay,
excellent.
The capital is different.
But... Yep, you're right. It's a capital I, so it looks the same as in English. And then eta, sigma, then you have a diphthong. There's your u sound, omicron, upsilon. And then the end sigma. So notice there's two sigmas in that, but it's different best because the final sigma changes form.
So that smooth breather accent only signifies that the word's beginning with a vowel.
Correct.
To do with the pronunciation.
Correct. Yeah, you don't pronounce it.
Okay.
Right. They just have to accent it because begins with a vowel.
Okay. What's this one signify again? Or with the umsilon? The u?
Oh, the circumflex?
Yeah.
So there's various uses to the circumflex. Most often it is indicating, I have to double check if that's what's indicated here, but it's when it's a combination of multiple vowels. It's when, yeah, so when multiple vowels come together, then it transforms into a new sound. And it's not over every diphthong, but it's showing you that there was a vowel that dropped out and it combined and turned into an oo,
okay.
The omicron upsilon. So it's just showing you that there was a, it's called, what is it called? Augmentation? That's the term, right?
Yeah.
Augmentation. Yeah, it's where there's it's jamming sounds together and it's dropping out letters and morphing. So for sound purposes. We do the same thing in English, right? When we change tenses. I say to you versus I said to you. We actually change the form of the word based upon the tense. And that same thing back then. You know, or same thing in Greek.
That's interesting when you said augmentation, when you jab together, because there's actually a medication called Augmentin, which is penicillin and clavulanic acid.
Jammed together? Oh, I bet it's related. I wonder if it is, because it's all like Greek and Latin, right? All your medical stuff. That's cool. Okay, so, did you take a stab at the word? How would you say that?
Soothe?
Ooh, so close. Good. Almost. Except you'd pronounce E, because that's not a diphthong. The iota and eta don't form a diphthong, so you pronounce both of them. So it's Iesus. Iesus. What word is Iesus?
Jesus.
Jesus. That's right. Jesus. So that's a beloved word in the New Testament. Okay? Iesus. Good. And then... let me get rid of that. Whoops.
What?
Yep.
Go ahead. What's that second to last letter?
In Iesus?
Yeah.
It's an upsilon, but it just has a circumflex over the top of it.
My handwriting's so bad, I thought it was the new.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's good. No, you good. I'm glad you brought that up because it does get a little tricky, right? The upsilon and the nu are really similar because it's a U versus like a V, like a sharp V,
uh-huh.
Right? The edge on it, the sharp V, that's the N, the nu sound, or the nu letter.
And I wrote it down and had that like weird font too.
Good, good. Way to ask that. That's good. Who's next? Okay, Walter. Third word. Well, second on the zoom-in screen.
Well, I can tell you the letters.
Okay, start with that. That helps. It often helps to start that way. Just kind of spell it out. Figure out the letters.
First person is alpha, then the other one, the next one is the iota, then rho, then epsilon, and then omega. Okay, I got that.
All right, so anyone want to help him out? The first one is a diphthong, so it combines. The alpha iota is an I, like as an aisle. I... Good. Ireo. Because that's where you put the emphasis, right? The accent is over top. Because the smooth breather doesn't matter, right? For pronunciation. The accent mark over the epsilon is where you put the emphasis. So it's Ireo. Good. Ireo. That is I take or bring. And then last one. This one's not hard. You got this because we already did this one earlier, right? Oh, oikos. Good. Yep. Good. Oikos. Excellent. The yogurt. That's the yogurt word. All right. So, and then notice the circumflex accent can actually go above a breathing mark. So you can actually have, you know, he's just illustrating that on this example. But like on oikos, you can have both the smooth breather and the circumflex on top of it. So like a circumflex can float over other markers. Yeah.
So how are you getting the os instead of os? What's the clue to that?
So it's the letter. So Omicron. So back to our alphabet. So it would be the difference between Omicron and Omega. So here, whoops, I'll get my highlighter to work here in a second. There we go. So this is your Omega. So when you see that letter, it's O. That's the long sound.
Okay.
When you see this letter, Omicron, it's the short sound, Ah.
Ah, okay.
So it kind of goes back to this slide earlier. So on your short and long vowels.
Okay.
See that? So there's your short, so that would always be Ah. And then your long vowel, your omega, that's your O.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's actually a totally different letter.
Leave that. Please.
Here, do you want me to get rid of the marks on there?
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Okay.
The marks will work too.
Whoops. So this is just a pet peeve of mine. How many of you have Logos Bible software? Or you know what it is?
I do.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm a big fan. I love Logos. Have Logos. Use it every day. But when it came out, they called it Logos because that's how you pronounce it. Okay. Now, if you go onto their website or listen to their, you know, cool little nifty sales pitch videos, they always say Logos. Drives me insane. They've actually intentionally rebranded to Logos. It's Logos, but it's so dumb because I'm like, that's not actually how you spell it, right? It's Logos.
Why did they rebrand it?
Because it sounds cool. I'm like, but they're supposed to be a bunch of Greek nerds. And I'm like, you guys totally are butchering the Greek. So, yeah. I'm like, they went from Logos to Logos. I'm like, are you kidding? So anyways, because it's Lambda, Omicron, Gamma, Omicron, Sigma. Logos, not Logos. Anyways, I digress. Okay, so a couple other just points. There's another marker. It doesn't happen that often. It's really only mostly in proper names, but it's called a diuresis. I struggle with that word. And it looks like two little dots. It's like a colon flipped up, you know, on top of a couple letters. And when you see that diuresis or diuresis over the second of two consecutive vowels, it indicates that they do not form a diphthong, but you need to pronounce both vowels. So like the example that they give here is prahistemi. Prahistemi. So normally an Omicron iota would be an oi, right? It combines to an oi sound, but that diuresis on top of it is telling you, no, you need to pronounce both vowels separately, not together. Does that make sense? It's common in mostly names where it's like a proper name and you need to hit every vowel to pronounce the name correctly. This is not a proper name, but this is just a word showing it's, you know, example of a diuresis. But does that make sense? So this is not proistemi, it's praistemi. So there's actually four syllables there. Pra-i-ste-mi. See that?
Does every other word have like the accent other than that one, like right there, so that you can have the emphasis? Or
that's a good question. So yeah, this one actually doesn't have an accent. They don't all, most of the time they do, but that's a good question. I'm not sure exactly why there's not one on this. But it would be, according to the transliteration, it would be on the third syllable there. So it's pra-i-ste-mi. Ste-mi. So the third syllable gets the accent there. But that's a good question, because it doesn't actually have the accent.
Now, in the word diuresis, if you take out that first E and substitute U, it'd be diuresis, which is something that makes you pee.
This class would not be the same without a medical doctor present.
Coffee is a diuretic.
It's a diuretic. That, well said. That makes good sense to me. okay, so there's only a couple of other marks. So there's the diuresis. The, again, this is a, it's the soft breather, or the smooth breather. But the second mark, which is more common, is this, it looks like the smooth breather, it's an apostrophe, but sometimes it will stand in the place of a vowel when this vowel has been dropped from a word, particularly at the end of a word due to the fact that the next word begins with a vowel. So like this, in this phrase, met emu, it's actually meta is the full word. So it drops an epsilon because the next word starts with an epsilon, and that would so confuse you. You would have to say meta emu, right? I mean, it's like you'd stumble all over yourself trying to pronunciate that. So they're like, well, it's met, and they just, but they put that marker there to show you that a vowel dropped out. So it's met emu. Does that make sense? Or meta. So it's meta would be the full. Did I say epsilon? So it's meta. Meta is actually a mu, epsilon, tau, alpha. So it drops the alpha because the next word begins with a vowel, and that's called elided. It just means it dropped off. And so sometimes that little apostrophe will mark that there was a vowel there, but there isn't anymore.
But that doesn't correlate with the apostrophe in English whatsoever.
No. No. No connection there. And then the only other thing, and that should be a number three up there, so pardon the... I need to fix that. But the third mark is an iota subscript. So sometimes, and we'll talk about this more later when we get to case endings, which is actually next week, hopefully. But this is where an iota will sometimes be written underneath a letter. Do you see that? So this is called an iota subscript, which can occur sometimes on long vowels, like a alpha, eta, and iota, or omega. The iota subscript looks like this on the screen. This does not affect the pronunciation of the word, but it is an essential part of its spelling. So don't pronounce the iota if it's a subscript. You don't pronounce it, but it is important to, most of the time, it indicates case. So like the dative case, we'll talk about datives next week, that iota subscript comes in kind of handy when you're studying that. And then the only other thing, real quick, and then we'll do one more practice reading, and then we'll be done. Is punctuation. So punctuation is pretty simple. There's a period that corresponds exactly to our English period. So when you see a period, just think period. It's normal. Also, the comma also corresponds to the English comma. But when it gets weird is when you see a semicolon in Greek that's actually a question mark. All right? So when you read... You know, you have to read that as a question. It's going to be a semicolon at the end of the sentence. And, you know, for in English readers, we're just like, oh, semicolon, and we think we keep going, but nope, that's a question mark in Greek. So you got to stop, ask the question. And then the colon or semicolon in Greek is just a dot. It's like an elevated period. You see, that's kind of like middle of the letter, but it's an elevated period. That's their semicolon. Those are not very common. You don't come across those very often, but they are in the New Testament. So... The big one you need to realize is the English-looking semicolon is actually a question mark. But in Greek, that's a question mark. Does that make sense? So the most important rule there is the third one. The first two, don't have to worry about because it's normal, right? It's just like in English. But in Greek, the third one is the most important. All right, questions on that before we practice one more time? Okay, here we go. So... one more, and then you guys, you will figure this out, okay? But you have to tell me what verse this is. So, so let's, you know what it is. Ah, you got it. So let's start with you. Why don't you show them all how it's done, and read at least, read the first line.
Photoscar,
good.
Ha, theos.
Yeah. Theos, good.
Ton, right?
Yep, ton, good.
Cosmon, hoste.
Good.
Ton.
Excellent. So, can you translate that first line? You know where it's going. That's autos would be he. Hutos is thus.
For God so loved the world.
Yeah. Exactly. For thus or so. God loved the world. All right. So what verse is it? Oh man, good. I was worried there for a second you guys wouldn't get that, but it is John 3:16. Oh, I'm so proud of you guys. Okay, good. So it's hutos, gar, agapesen, ha, theos, ton, kosmon. Kosmon, that's just the accusative case. We'll talk about that next week. Of the noun cosmos, right, which is world. It's actually a pretty common word. We talk about the cosmos, right? Even in English, we talk about that. So, yes. So that excellent first line. Okay, so first word, second line. You want to give it to us? How would you say the first word, second line?
Okay. Let's see. So new.
No. That's an easy. Yes, good. Upsilon. So new is the final letter in that word. But do you see how, do you see how easy that is to mix up? See that? Because so the first one is an upsilon, and most fonts, this is, I think, Times New Roman font, but it's, they put that little squiggle, like kind of a cursive, you know, on the top of the upsilon to help you distinguish an upsilon from a new. But the new is like a hard V, right? It's got the nice angle to it. Okay, close. Excellent. It's the diphthong, rough breather, and then it's the upsilon iota. So it's huion. Huion. Yep. And do you remember, guys? Anyone remember? What's the word huion or huios would be the nominative form. Huion would be the accusative form. Or just quote the verse. You'll figure it out. For thus or so, God loved the world so that, hoste, is so that, so it's a resultive conjunction, so that ton huion, the son. Good. The son, ton, I'll make you, okay, I already did ton for you. Second line, third word. Yeah. Here, I'll zoom in a little bit. That one is, it's actually a really important, highly debated word in the New Testament. You got it? You know what it is. Can you translate it?
Monogene.
Good. Monogene, which would be in English. Monogene is the Greek word, but it's the only begotten, right? But there's a big debate on that, is do you pronounce it only begotten, or do you pronounce it, or I'm sorry, translate it only begotten, or do you translate it one of a kind, unique? There's a big debate on that because of the root. Does it come from, because mana is manos, one, right? Or only. And then the gen right there, basically the gamma, epsilon, nu. The debate is, what is that root? Is it from ginamai? Or gena'o. If it's from gena'o, then it's the only begotten son.
Isn't that a big debate, like when you are trying to witness to Mormons? Because they think that the begotten, like, and they line him up with Lucifer and us and everybody else is begotten.
That's right.
He's the first begotten. Whereas if you translate that more unique and one of a kind, it has a totally different meaning, which fits in with Orthodox Christian theology.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a big debate on that. I tend to think the, again, look up BDAG, okay? You know, your big, huge lexicon here. It's going to quote a bunch of external to the Bible sources, because the word monogenes only appears like, I have to look, 3 or 4 times in the New Testament, and it's all John. John uses it every time it appears, except for there is one use in Hebrews 11, because it refers to, and that's the big debate, right? But it refers to Isaac as the monogenes of Abraham. So he was the one and only son. But is it, though, again, is it only begotten son? Because that's not actually true, right? Abraham actually had more than one son that he begot. So it's like, so what does the term actually mean? And in BDAG, we'll argue that it's with extra biblical reference. So outside the Bible, just look at the corpus of the Greek language. It more frequently refers to unique or one of a kind. So the one and only. So some of your Bible translations, some of the newer translations, will have actually opted for that. And they say it is, he gave his one and only son. So for what it's worth, I think that's probably the better way of translating it. But nobody asked me. Okay, so, you know. So anyways, who's next? Eric the Elder. So what's the second line, fourth word after monogene? Close, yeah. Edokin. Edokin. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Because the omega would be an O, a long O. Edokin. So there's your long O, Corey. Yeah. So edokin. Edokin. We'll talk about it later. It means to give. It's a verb to give. It's the... now I need to look. I'm pretty sure that's the aorist form, but it might be perfect, actually. I should look at that. Next word, James. Next word, after the comma.
Hina?
Close. Yeah, so you got the rough breather? Hina. Hina. So it's a hina. Which we'll talk about that later. The hina clause is one of the most important exegetical details in reading Greek and then teaching, you know, a Bible lesson. Hina clauses are really important. And so are hosta clauses. So that he gave his one and only son in order that. Hina is an in order that is normally how you translate it. It's a purpose clause. It's telling you the purpose for which he gave the son. Hina. Corey, what's the next word after hina? Do I need to circle it? Here. Sorry.
No, I got it.
Okay.
But I don't.
I
this one. You're pointing
yes,
to.
This one right there.
That's what I should have said.
So first letter?
Is pi. It should be pa.
Good. P sound.
Now, then, now what's that over?
So that's a circumflex.
Yeah.
So but it doesn't matter for pronunciation.
It doesn't change it at all?
Mm-mm. No.
Why is it there?
Yeah, good question. No, it's augmentation. Yeah, it's telling us what case it is. We'll talk about cases next week. Because every noun there's 4 cases. Unless we're studying classical Greek and then there's 8. And it's like really confusing. But Koine only has 4. So we're good. We got it. You guys got it. Yeah, all right. If you say so. So alpha and then sigma. Just give it a stab. We won't laugh at you.
Don't
not too hard.
If I had a stab, I'd stab it. I'm tongue tied.
Okay, Gabe, you try that one. How would you say?
Pos.
Good. Pos. Excellent. Pos.
I should have took the stab.
I was just say, yeah.
No,
can
you... In my head, that sounded stupid, so.
Yeah, it was spot on. Yeah. So the next word, Corey, we'll go back to you. What's the next one? Because we're not letting you out of this.
So it's when do we turn around?
No, we don't do that. So
Gabe did the pause for you. What's that one? Rough breather, Omicron.
That's a rough breather?
Yep. Well, I should have asked you, do you recognize that as a rough breather? Sorry, I gave you that one away. But that's where, that you just got to get used to that. It's that backwards apostrophe, but that's the H sound.
So, oh?
Ha.
Ha, oh, ha.
Ha.
Yes. You even told us that.
Yeah, that's the article, the.
No, I get a double bad point for that. You jumped this out earlier.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
On the word rhema, would it be chrema, or is it just still rhema because it's a consonant?
Yeah, good question. So it is, it's tough. It's because it's not a great, it's supposed to kind of have that rough breather. It's like chrema. Yeah, but it's like it's kind of hard for some of us to say it that way.
I'm going to put out a disclaimer, though, because I'm on my third attempt at Rosetta Stone Spanish. So, in other words, I can learn a lot of stuff, but languages come really hard to me. I don't know why. I think you kind of have a template.
Sure. No, I understand that. So, and it's true.
Some people just can go languages. Elisa, number one, is very good at languages. I don't have it. So this is
dude, way to hang in here, though. You're the man. I love that you're part of the class, though. This is good. This is really good. Okay, so who's next? Okay, Sean, you got the little bit harder word. After ha, starts with pi.
This might take me a minute.
Okay, work on that one. What's the next? Eric, the younger, you got an easier word this time. It's a short one. The last word of the second line.
Ace.
Excellent. Good. See? Didn't you have an A word last time with an epsilon iota? I'm trying to remember. Hey, you're nailing that diphthong. Well done. Well done. Okay. Keep practicing. Tell us when you're ready. Okay. Andrew, first line. Or, I'm sorry, first words. Well, actually, let's make you do... Go all the way to Allah. So do like the half of that last line.
Altan
May.
May.
Yeah, so the Ada would be a long May.
May. Apolitai.
Good. Apolitai.
Allah. Or Angla. It's Angla.
It's Allah, actually. But that's a good question. Because sometimes when you that Allah, the L's don't do that. It's the gammas that do that. When you put two gammas next to each other, then it's like an NG. So like angel, right, is ungulos. Yeah, because it's actually alpha, two gammas right in a row. And you're not, when there's two gammas, it's actually pronounced with a NG sound. So it's ungulos.
I think I forgot it.
Okay, you got it.
Peace,
dude. Really close. So it's pistuon, pistuon. Because the epsilon and the upsilon form a diphthong. Mm-hmm. But then the omega has to be pronounced by itself because that's not a diphthong. So you have two vowel sounds there. So it's pistuon, pistuon.
Okay, so I just didn't get the omega sound.
Right. So you said pistoon, right? Yeah. Which is really close. So just say it again, but then with the omega. Excellent. Pistuon. Excellent.
So
well done.
What does that translate to?
So it's actually a participle, but with the article in front of it, it makes it a substantive participle. So technically, pistuon is the word believing, but then when you put an article in front of it, it is the believing one, the one that is believing. Does that make sense?
Pistuon.
Yep. So in order that all the one who is believing, or every one who is believing, ace autan, in or on him, may apolitai, will not perish, but Allah will, okay, your turn. You can finish the verse. You got the last three words. Can you do it?
Let's see. That's.
Okay, not the X, or it's not the, it's ek-e.
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 Yep.
Okay. Zoane.
Good. Zoane.
Aeon. Neon.
Good.
Aeonion.
Yep. Aeonion or Ionion because the diphthong. Ionion. Good. But will have life to the ages or life eternal life. Good. And do you see under a K, do you see the iota subscript? So that is, it's important to tell us what form the word is, but it's not like it doesn't matter for pronunciation. So you actually pronounced it perfectly. Yeah, it's a K. Good. Excellent. Okay, well, look at this, guys. It's 4:59, and you guys read John 3:16 in Greek. I am so proud of you, right? Well done.
For all of us.
Yeah, right. Hey, that's okay. All right, so thoughts, questions, comments before we shut her down for today, and then we'll pick it up here next week with, we'll start talking. Next time, we're going to talk about the major parts of speech. And then what we're going to do is we're just going to start tackling them one at a time. We're going to start with nouns because this is the way I learned it in high school. And it's easier in my mind. So we'll start with noun, pronoun, adjective, adverb, article, preposition, conjunction, interjections. Then we're going to jump to verbs last. Verbs are the hardest, but they are the most important, okay? Because they're the workhorses of any language is your verbs. But they're also the most complicated. And so we'll save verbs for last. Because once you master noun case endings, which is what we'll introduce you to next week, then they hold true for pronouns, adjectives, articles. They, in other words, you can learn like four major parts of speech all at once. It's really not that hard. Once you kind of figure out the case endings, then you're like, you're halfway there. You've already figured out half the parts of speech. It's really pretty easy. So we'll work through that. But any thoughts, questions, comments for tonight, today, before we're done?
In Revelation 1:8, Alpha is spelled out, Omega is not. But why is that?
No, that's a good question. I, because you could do it either way. Yeah, you could do just a, but Omega standing on its own is probably easier to distinguish as a capital letter if there is, or just the letter Omega. Mm-hmm. But if all you did was an alpha standing alone, it looks like an article. So it looks like a feminine nominative article. And so okay. It's, does that make sense? So it's like, it would be easy to misread that.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Because just an alpha standing by itself could mean something else.
Gotcha, okay.
But
we'll
when
get
you,
into that later in the grammar.
Yeah. Well, when you start learning other parts of speech and grammar.
Okay.
But the alpha, when you spell it out, now you can't mess that up. It's like,
right.
Okay, he's talking about the letter alpha, not, you know, some other part of speech.
Right. Okay.
That would be my best guess as to why it's spelled out all the way. That's a good question. All right. Kind of fun, isn't it? You having fun yet? This is a great way to learn. In a group like this, it's so awesome. Yeah.
I don't want to get labeled a tattletale, but James was taking pictures of my notes.
Now you two in the back row get along, okay? Unbelievable. Okay, so we're going to close in prayer. We'll be done. Don't forget, just start working on your vocab. Work ahead. I don't care. But if you are taking it for credit, I need to talk to your mom about that to be sure. But if so, then we'll do a quiz of, you know, and it'll be the pace is 10 words a week. Which is pretty doable. It's not that hard, but that will help us because we'll be, I counted out on a calendar, we're going to be really close. If we only take off a couple weeks, like in like Christmas and Thanksgiving or something like that, you know, but if we meet most every weekend between now and I think it went through May, then I think we can get 30 weeks or really close, like maybe 28, something like that, which would, again, roughly put you at the top 300 words, okay? That's kind of my goal. That's normal for your first year Greek is to learn the top 300 words. And then, like I said, you can use that Greek reader, and you'll be way down the road in learning Greek and being able to read it on your own. It's really helpful.
And for Elisa, this packet that you got, Jeff said the first two stapled ones.
Right. That's really all we're going to primarily focus on. I gave you the full pack.
For completeness.
Oh, okay.
Right. But it's really the first two staples, which is the first four pages. That takes you through the top, 308 words or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically the target that I'm shooting for, is to try to encourage you to, everyone, get roughly the top 300 words. Because at the end of first year Greek, a first year Greek student graduate can, you know, that's their expected baseline, is to know the top 300 words. So, but like I said, if you read them and study them and sound them out, you know, you learn, but then you'll be pleasantly surprised with how many of them you will recognize, in because it's similar to an English word, or we drug it right from Greek into English. And so it's, or you can see the root word of it. It's kind of fun. And that Vines that I recommended earlier is really cool. BDAG as well, but Vines is more accessible. It gives some cool, like, etymology every once in a while, like to help you see where a certain, you know, Greek word ends up in English through Latin or something, but it's kind of fun. So that helps with vocab. It helps you remember. So, all right. Well, I think we are done for tonight. And so let's close in prayer, and then we'll pick it up here next time. Gracious Father, thank you so much for the time. Lord, I thank you again for this group of people. I thank you for the sweet providence we have in, Lord, your sweet providence to allow us to gather in the group setting like this to read, to attempt to learn the Greek language so we can read the New Testament in its original language. Lord, we are excited for this opportunity. We pray that you would help us to enjoy the process, to sharpen one another as we study, as we read, as we encourage one another, as we discover, Lord, all the cool stuff that you have in store for us, the blessings of New Testament Greek. So, Father, we commit our time to you, and we ask that you would help us to give it our best effort for your honor and glory, as well as our good. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.